Welcome back. It's episode 38 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and I'm so far behind in my grad school paper. You've probably seen on Twitter. I could really use a demonic tutor to help me finish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I'm your co-host, Mike Coyle. And lately, I've been feeling like the Gitrog monster. I know I shouldn't be on Arena, but I am, and I'm getting behind on my chores.
No.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander.
What is on the agenda? Oh, no. I cut you off last week, too.
That's okay.
Go for it.
Hey, do you like this podcast? You do, right? You're listening to it? You like this podcast?
I do.
Please leave a comment. Please like, subscribe, comment.
Retweet.
Retweet. We would really like to, if you like this podcast, maybe other people would like this podcast, too. And that's how we get the attention to...
That Coyle wants.
I do want it. I do want it so bad. But also, if you're looking to buy singles or sealed products and it's not available at your local game stores and you're going to buy them on TCG Player, please do so through our TCG Player link.
On our website.
Yeah. It helps us, you know, get a little bit on the side to do some pack one, pick ones and giveaways and that kind of thing. So please think about us when you buy your singles.
We appreciate it all.
Oh, yes.
What's on the agenda this week?
Today, we're going to talk about how there was another secret lair drop.
Another one.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm blanking. we are...
There was an update to the MTG Arena companion app.
Yes. Yes. And we're going to talk about that. And then our main topic for today is going to be a segment we call 10 Under 10. Where we're going to talk about 10 commander cards that are played in less than 10% of the decks they could appear in, according to the EDH Rec website.
And then we have Commander of the Week.
Woo! I'm doing that one this week.
You are. It's going to be wheelie fun.
It's so, so fun.
On your Falcon Wrath.
Yes.
So we had another secret layer drop announcement. It is secret layer Thalia, Beyond the Hell Vault.
Yeah.
So on March 12th, Magic the Gathering Arena will be updating Historic with 25 new cards to add to players' arsenals, and the secret layers happening as well. Thalia is one of the cards that's going to be added to Historic on Arena.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll do the anthology first. It says on March 12th, the announcement says on March 12th, Arena is releasing its second anthology of new cards going straight into the Historic format, alongside the return of the Historic ranked and traditional Historic ranked queues. Both queues are going to kick off on March 12th and run through April 16th. So there's a full list, but those cards are Ancestral Mask, Baron Moor, Bajookabog, Brain Maggot, Dragonmaster Outcast, Forgotten Cave, Ghost Quarter, Goblin Rune Blaster, Inexorable Tide, Knight of the Reliquary, Lonely Sandbar, Maelstrom Pulse, Meddling Mage, Mirror Reedry, we're halfway there, Nyx Police Ram, Pack Rat, Platinum Angel, Ranger of Eos, Secluded Step, Sigil of the Empty Throne, Terravor, Thalia, Garden of Thraben, Tranquil Thicket, Virulent Plague, and Waste Not. So there's a lot of cards. I'm excited for Pack Rat. To be honest, though, I've only ever watched gameplay. I haven't played this format. I don't know if it's a real format yet. Like
Historic? Everything that,
I mean, it's a format.
It is.
But is it a format that people are actively playing and making content for? I mean, there's not a whole lot out there.
There's not. And I think that has a lot
to do. It's weird. It's a weird format.
It has a lot to do with how much, you know, Wizards of the Coast and Magic Arena is supporting it. Like, obviously, the format exists, but there's not a lot of, like, main page, like, tournaments going on, like, buy-in tournaments that they would have for draft or standard. So I have heard that Wizards is looking to support it more, and maybe we will see some, like, actual front page play this game type.
Right.
Type of thing.
Well, and it says the cards will be craftable through wild cards, or you can purchase a playset, 4 copies of each card for either 4,000 gold or 4,000 gems or 25,000 gold
mm-hmm.
if you need them. And then Thalia Beyond the Hell Vault. So just like all other secret layers, 24 hours only at secretlayer.wizards.com on March 12th at 9 a.m. So it's $29.99, 15 per customer. And it says, here's what you'll get. You get 4 premium foil copies of Thalia Garden of Thraben, each with a different art and flavor text. They're all pretty cool, actually. One has an Eldrazi in it. Some don't. Some have some spirits. It says you will also get one code for MTG Arena that redeems for a digital sleeve featuring Thalia Beyond the Hell Vault art and four card styles. One for each secret layer version of Thalia. These aren't the cards. Obviously, you still have to craft them. Mm-hmm. And then it says it's being published in English only and features new artistic interpretations of Thraben's Brave Guardian with multiple different artists here.
Mm-hmm.
They're really pretty. I think we actually already retweeted that, so you may have already seen it this week. It says, yeah, nope, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the whole announcement.
Four different arts of Thalia in case, you know, we talked about playing four Thalias in one deck.
This, yep, we did. It's
we
it's
found like one.
Death and Taxes
Death
plays
and
this.
Taxes.
So, I mean, there's some people super excited about this.
For sure. I just see, so I see like someone who is actually playing Death and Taxes in a format where people are playing Hand Disruption. It's important to play the same artwork of each copy of your card.
Yep.
They're buying four sets of this if they really like that artwork.
Yeah, this is one where, so I play Thalia in two decks
mm-hmm.
in Commander. I actually do play this. It's probably not even necessary. I just had it.
Sure. It's a good card.
I mean, it affects my own non-creature spells as well, so I generally don't want to pay one extra for my own, and I don't think it does enough work for me. It's just one of those cards that I haven't cut yet.
You play it in humans, don't you, which is mostly creatures?
I do play it in my humans deck, and then I play it in my Lavinia Azorius Renegade deck. That one is the one that I think it really belongs in. In humans, I don't know if I care about it. Hmm. It's a 2/1 that is a human.
Yeah.
I don't know, slowing somebody down for one turn maybe is... Could make a difference, maybe, but...
Is it only one turn? Doesn't it have first strike, too?
Yeah, it's a 2/1.
Yeah, but it's got first strike.
I mean, you're not taking much out.
Ka-cha!
It's gonna
put a bunch of +1/+1 counters on that baby.
I can block with black token decks, but I'm not swinging into token decks. They can put 3 on it.
That's true.
You know, this is one that I would go in on with somebody, though. Because mm-hmm. I like the art.
Yeah, the art is really, really cool.
But
I like the close-up one. That's my favorite one.
The close-up, yeah, the one on the bottom right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like the one where she's like, she looks like she's about to stab some Eldrazi tentacles.
Mm, stab them tentacles.
Stab the tentacles. Or the one where she's standing, like it looks like, behind the Hell Vault.
Okay.
Something's exploding.
Yeah.
But they're really cool. So there's another secret layer drop. There's some people also talking about whether or not there's too many of these. I don't think there are. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, not every single one's going to be for everyone. So someone's going to want all of them.
Well, now that the secret layer drops are happening like one at a time and not 5 sets at a time, I think it's more reasonable. But I could see like if every single time they came out, it was 5 different secret layers you could buy.
Oh, like when they originally did like Cats and Serum Visions and like the original
right.
setting and, of 7 or whatever
and,
that was.
Well, and then they did it for the God Cycle as well, where they had 5 different ones or whatever it was.
But that was great and I bought it.
Well, sure.
Take my money.
But like, yeah, it did kind of seem, at least to me, it did seem a little bit overwhelming that there's like 5 new sets. But now it's just like 1 new set at a time. This is a lot more reasonable.
I assume we're going to get at least 1 a month. This is the 2nd one this month.
Right.
That's been announced. So, but they're not just Commander. Obviously we can see by this one.
For sure. Well, and Serum Visions was another.
Serum Visions was another. I think we said the exact same thing when that one came out. It's like you want 4 of the same card generally in a 60 card construct or 75.
Yep.
Excuse me. Constructed, you know, format. You don't want to be playing 4.
Right.
I mean,
you want to be playing 4 different arts, yeah.
I mean, typically. Maybe you do. Some
I mean,
people play
for fun, one, for sure.
Some people play every single land of theirs is different. And they don't have matching lands.
I like running.
I used to do that.
Full art lands with full art lands to trigger people.
Do you just put like 1 white border land in there too?
Yes.
Just for good measure.
Yeah, it's very good measure as well. It really, really just
it measures well.
It ticks people off so much. It's awesome.
Yeah, so that's coming out. So I believe that was March 12th. So
cool.
Companion app. So for those of you that play with tournaments at home, whether it be standard or cube or whatever, draft, The companion app has been updated so that you can actually update your name, first and last name, if there's any issues there. It said previously when you joined or hosted an event using companion, you were prompted to provide a first and last name to display to others. You could manually update it at on the website, but that process was cumbersome. So now when you join or host an event and don't have your first or last name saved, you'll be prompted with a screen to actually enter it to update your account. If you need to change your name on your account because of a name change, or even if you simply made a mistake during your registration, you can actually do that this way as well. And then it said alongside Companion, the team's been working on replacement software for the Wizards Event Reporter. The project is coming along nicely, and they've been testing Companion in conjunction with the new Event Reporter software for the last month. So we will stay tuned.
Yeah, this will be exciting.
This is really easy to use, though. We did this when we did Cube last time.
Yep.
So I'm glad they're making improvements to this. And
well, and the end goal is to really use it for like in-store tournaments and at GPs and
I can make sure that the correct my correct DCI number is used, because I have two.
Uh huh.
Because one store couldn't find mine, so they just made me another, and then I merged them, and now both my numbers appear at every store, and they keep getting unlinked. Because I guess if you use the number that's been linked to another, it unlinks them. So, I don't really know which DCI number I should use.
Whichever one they got, that's the one I'm using.
Yeah, do you have one? Use that one.
I think I have four DCI numbers.
Really?
I always forgot my DCI number when I first started playing, yeah.
No, but if you didn't register it online.
And then I registered one online.
No, but you wouldn't have multiple unless you registered all four online.
Well, I mean, when I went to my first Magic Fest, it was registered under one DCI number. And then I think the next day when I went back to that Magic Fest, I didn't have my DCI number and I got a new one. So I registered two DCI numbers at the same Magic Fest.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty great.
To the same email.
I think so.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh man. So, well, I did save it to the notes on my phone now. So if anybody asks me, I can.
Perfect.
So a lot of people have that number memorized. It's a lot of numbers.
That's a lot of numbers.
It's a big strand of numbers.
I've never had to actually recite it. I usually just hand my card over. I couldn't even tell you what number mine starts with.
Mine starts with 811 because that's what the shops always say. Is it the 811 or the 22 something? I was like, I think it's 8. I don't know. If you see my name, it's me.
That's true.
You want to move on to 10 under 10.
Yeah. So this is a segment that Andy and I talked about doing, looking at underplayed cards in Commander.
And this is completely based on our opinion. These are in an order that is not necessarily necessary.
Right.
You know, these aren't like, this is number one and this is the 10th most under or the 10th least or most underplayed card. No, it's
right.
We picked 10.
And then,
it's all our opinion. Yeah, for sure. So,
and on top of that, we said, no mana rocks. We're going to skip mana rocks.
Yeah.
Mana rocks would be a very good discussion to have, because I think there are some underplayed mana rocks. I'm going to talk about one in my, my Commander of the Week deck actually. But yeah, so these are cards that we looked at EDH Rec, and obviously EDH Rec doesn't have every single deck that's been built in the world, but it is decks built on a lot of popular websites for deck building. And they pull all the statistics together and tell us what percentage of decks these cards are in that they can be.
I also believe that it's only decks that they can be in since the card has come out as well. So I don't believe it's necessarily historical. I was trying to find that earlier.
Okay.
I'm not 100% on that. If anyone knows that answer... I was trying to find it.
Okay.
But we can start with number 10. This one was mine. Sudden Substitution.
Yes.
Yes, from the most recent Commander sets. Sudden Substitution is an instant for two colorless blue-blue that has split second, and it says exchange control of target non-creature spell and target creature. Then the spell's controller may choose new targets for it. It is played in just over 1,500 decks.
Yeah.
This came in a pre-con.
It did.
And it's in 1% of 152,000 decks.
Yeah.
That it could be in.
So not very many.
No.
I imagine, I looked up the statistics of how many Zedru decks that this was played in, because it would be just, this card fits any Zedru deck you could possibly have. It does exactly what Zedru wants to do, and it gives away a permanent that you have at split second.
A creature. Yeah.
Right. So it's in 41% of Zedru decks that are out there. I imagine that a lot of people just built the Savine deck kind of just pre-con and put it out there. But I know approximately one third of the decks that this card is in Zedru. I assume another one third is in Savine, and then it's scattered out throughout the, some other things.
I'm actually looking at it right now. It says that 57% are in Kadena.
Oh,
it came in Kadena pre-con.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Correct. And then it's actually only 10% in Zedru.
Wow.
It's really low for Zedru. And then the third is 8% of Angus McKenzie decks.
Okay.
So I'm not quite sure on why, unless Angus McKenzie's giving away something that makes it so creatures can't attack. I mean, it's a fog deck.
Well, I know Angus McKenzie sometimes struggles to having win cons, and you can use this card as a win con and give away pacts.
Just not the blue one, because the blue one counters the spell on the stack. So the white one or the green one.
If you put a couple spells on the stack or something, maybe.
They'll just lose. They're going to counter that pact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The top commander here is Kadena, and then Zedru, then Angus McKenzie. And then it says Volrath, but again, Volrath is in the pre-con with Kadena. So I assume that accounts for a decent portion of this. So it's the only spell that does what it does.
Right.
There's cards that give away permanents. There's cards that can gain control of permanents, but there's nothing that gives away a permanent and steals a spell like this.
Right. I have the closest card I could find that even does something remotely close. I have Role Reversal, which exchanges two permanents that share a type. That card sees about 3% of play versus the 1% from Sudden Substitution. And then Narset's Reversal, you know, you do take someone else's instant or sorcery and you bounce it back to their hand. This doesn't have the permanent exchange, but that's played in 8% of decks.
Gilded Drake comes in and you exchange control of a creature
with
Gilded Drake. Yeah. Yep. So I mean, there's a lot of exchange control. There's Conjured Currency. There's a Chimera from, I believe, the original Theros block.
Perplexing Chimera.
Yeah. Chimera. But this is the only spell that does this, and so I think the thing that people don't necessarily know about this card is it doesn't have to be your own, so you can do this with other people's stuff. So if someone casts a spell that you don't want them to have, but it wouldn't be a big deal if someone else had it, you can take that spell and exchange it with someone else's creature, and then the person who lost the creature gets that spell.
Yeah. And you can make it a political tool.
And if you don't have a way to beat a creature, you can cast like Opt and then cast this. Give the person an Opt and take the creature that's giving you problems. So if someone plays something really big or something that's just going to win the game if they keep it, you can take it. And this has split second, so they can't respond with another spell.
You try to take my creature, I can still sack it to my Ashnod's altar.
You can do that, and if it's a Llanowar Elf, you can tap it for green mana, so it's tapped when I get it.
Yep.
If you desire. But I think this card is severely underplayed.
Yeah.
It's just, if you're playing a Spellslinger deck, and this is a card that I am contemplating for like a Noyan Dar deck.
Sure.
Because all I do is cast spells, and I could just take their best creature, which is what that deck struggles with.
Yeah. And it's 4 mana, and
it's reasonable.
Most of the cards in Noyan Dar, in terms of instants and sorceries, no other deck is going to want when you exchange the control for someone else's creature.
No. Yeah, they don't want my Mystic Speculation to Scry 3.
Right.
And then do nothing with it.
That's
it. Because I cast both, so Noyan Dar gets the he gets to animate no matter what when I cast both of these.
Right.
It's not upon the resolution, it's on the cast. So I think this is an underplayed card, and if you have any fun stories with any of these, send them along.
Yeah.
But Sudden Substitution generally just takes a really good spell. And if you are already aware of Sudden Substitution's really unique interaction with the pact cards, there's pact for every color, and the card does something. It can tutor a creature, it can counter a spell, it can do whatever, and then it has, at your next upkeep, you pay a certain amount of mana. If you can't pay that mana, you lose the game. So what you do is you cast that spell, and then you cast Sudden Substitution, and you take someone's creature and you give them the pact, and then at their upkeep, if they can't pay it, they lose the game, so you give it to the person who doesn't play the color of that pact.
Yep.
So you'd have to do, as long as it's not Pact of Negation, because right. that one allows you to counter Sudden Substitution on the stack. But the rest of them, your opponent just loses the game. It's too unique of an interaction for that to really matter as to why this card is good. But that does exist. You just win the game if you cast a pact and this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, if you play them, you might as well use them.
Yeah.
Alternate win condition.
That is an alternate win condition.
So number 9 on our list, if our lists are the same, Miri Weatherlight Duelist.
Yep.
Okay, cool. All right. So Miri Weatherlight Duelist is a cat, green-white, that came in the cat's pre-con. It's a 1 green and a white. It's a 3-2 first strike. It says, whenever Miri Weatherlight Duelist attacks, each opponent can't block with more than one creature this combat. And as long as Miri Weatherlight Duelist is tapped, no more than one creature can attack you each combat. So it is very underplayed. It's in 7% of decks that it can be in, and I have a high inclination that those are all cat decks.
It's just over 4,000 decks total, yeah, so it's in 7%. Top commanders are Marisi, Breaker of the Coil, Arabo, Roar of the Wild, okay, so actually yeah. both those are cats.
Yeah, sure.
And then it's a Najila, because it's a warrior, and then Nazan, another cat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So three cats and then warrior. And it's really good in warriors.
It is. This card can be a win condition for a go-wide strategy with tokens. This is not an elf, but it might actually belong in Reese the Redeemed. If you're going wide with elves and you swing, 10 2-2 elves at someone and you don't want your elves to, they can only block one. And everything else gets through.
It's really good with Convoke. You decide to tap this to Convoke a spell.
For
and
sure.
And it's tapped and then someone can't swing at you. It's similar to like a Crawl Space.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or a Silent Arbiter. Silent Arbiter says that only one creature can attack each turn. Only one creature can block each turn. But this one, it makes it so it's only affecting your opponents. It's not a symmetrical effect. I guess the most similar card I found to this would be Champion of Lamholt. Whenever a creature comes into play under your control, you can put a +1/+1 counter on Champion of Lamholt, and then creatures with less power than Champion of Lamholt cannot block creatures you control.
They fill a similar role, right? They're not doing the same thing.
They're not exactly the same.
Just trying to get damage through.
But you could use it as a win condition, especially if you have like a haste enabler or something out for it to swing wide. Each one of your opponents will only be able to block one of your creatures if you have 40 tokens out or something.
Right, they work super well together. High synergy, and I just I have the Miri Weatherlight Duelist secret lair drop.
Oh, cool!
And that one's pretty cool. I don't think this card is played very often.
I barely ever see it, especially in the 99.
It's in my Marisi deck, which, was fairly new, and I haven't played it a ton, but it does look like it's still just played mostly in pre-cons or in a specific deck. But this is good in any green-white deck.
Yeah.
If you're swinging.
For sure.
The next card on our list is actually just a mana dork, but a really good one.
Just a mana dork.
Zertad Druid. It is a 1/1 for red and green. A human druid that has tap for green. And then tap to add green to your mana pool. Whenever you tap it, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. And that matters.
Whenever you tap it for mana, specifically.
Correct. When you tap it for mana.
Yeah.
It does matter. This card is played in 5% of the decks it could be in, and it's only in 2,700 decks.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, you do need green and white. And it's mostly played... Green and red. I'm sorry. Green and red. It's played in Rurikthar, 61%. of the Rurikthar decks, 51% of the Ulasht, the Hate Seed card, which is just another kind of like a ramp,
yeah.
I guess, commander for the most part. You remove counters and you put sapperlings into play. And then it's in Clothis. So it's really just a mana dork.
It really is.
But I guess being in red-green, I just don't know if it's being played enough.
I mean, 5% seems real low. It is 2 mana.
And green-red decks are ramping.
They always be ramping.
Always be ramping. Naya decks are also ramping.
Mm-hmm. So
it seems super low.
It does. So I looked up some of the statistics of the other dorks, and you know, these are the one drops, yeah, are probably going to see more play that also tap for green, like Elvish Mystic, Llanowar Elves at 20% and 25% respectively. But then you look at some of the other mana dorks that might be doing something less optimal in a way. Elves of Deep Shadow.
Yeah, you lose life when you tap that one, right?
You lose life and it taps for a black and it costs a green. That's played in 13% of decks. And then Arbor Elf, which just untaps a land. Sometimes that can be better, sometimes, you know, different. That's played in 11%. And then there's also Findhorn Elves, which is a 2-mana dork that taps for green or a color of your choices when it enters the battlefield, and that's played in 10%. But none of those do damage every time you tap it for mana. You know, we talked kind of on the way here about how even when you have like a Prismatic Talisman or a Great Henge out, even if you're not going to use the mana, since mana burn is no longer a thing, you're going to tap it, gain the life before your next turn. So same thing with Xur'Tah Druid. You're going to tap it, do a damage. You can even use it as a blocker, and then in response, as you move to the damage step, you know, tap it, do a damage to everyone. It's versatile.
We do have a correction. Findhorn Elves is also 1 mana.
Oh, it is 1 mana?
It is. It's just like Llanowar. I was like, am I crazy? I think that's 1 mana.
It is 1 mana.
Yeah. It's just, very good comparison to the Great Henge. Because even if you didn't need it, you're still going to tap it before your next turn to ping 1 damage.
For sure.
And if you add like Torbran into a deck, it lightning bolts each of your opponents.
Yeah.
So
that's a good combo. Every turn, lightning bolt all of your opponents.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 7, near and dear to my heart. Final Parting.
Also a card that's extremely difficult to find. For an uncommon from Dominaria. So I'm assuming this number's off. Obviously these are only reported decks, but
yeah, so this is played in 5% of decks available, 6,000, just under 7,000, 6,800. So for 3, a black and a black, you can search your library for 2 cards. Put one into your hand and the other into your graveyard, then shuffle your library. So
it's a very good combo enabler.
Absolutely. So it's literally Diabolic Tutor and Entomb on 1 card at sorcery speed. Diabolic Tutor is for 2 black-black. Search for a card, put it in your hand. Entomb is instant speed for 1 black. It says search for a card, put it in your graveyard. So in a black deck, you search for whatever creature you want to reanimate and reanimate spell.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that I don't see this card played in World Gorger Dragon combo decks is ridiculous.
Well, it's played in my Lazolda World Gorger Dragon combo deck.
Seven mana, you win.
I just got it for the first. It was like one of the first cards I wanted to put on there because that deck needs to win somehow, but yeah, it's not going to win until it gets those 2 cards. It's just random red black stuff.
Sure.
And so that I can say that there's a Lysolda deck being played somewhere because it's not sure. Really being played.
Sure.
And so I looked for Final Parting and I went to 4 different game shops and there were none. It's what? So either it's being played significantly or
maybe people just haven't turned in their
They may not have posted. Yeah. So I feel like this is out of all of them, this is the one card that when Coyle gave me his list of 10 and I was putting together my list, I was like, there's no way this is under 10. And when I looked, I saw 5. Oh,
that's ridiculous. I mean, it does cost 5 mana. 3 black-black. So if you really probably don't, if you only have 5 mana untapped, you probably don't want to cast this because it's going to take a full round to get around. Whatever's in your graveyard is going to get exiled if someone has an answer to it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So,
but 7 mana, you win the game.
You win the game
with this.
Or even if you have 6 mana and you're playing black, you throw Vilas, Broker of Blood, and you grab Reanimate if you can afford Reanimate as a spell. And you put it in your hand, you cast it for 1 black, you lose 8 life after Vilas is on the battlefield and draw 8 cards. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. This is and it's 7. If you play this, you grab World Gorger Dragon to the graveyard and you put Animate Dead in your hand,
yep.
you have infinite mana for 7 mana.
Yep.
If this is in your deck and those cards aren't obviously in your hand.
Right.
The only thing is you can't get World Gorger into your graveyard if it's in your hand, unless you have a spell to discard.
Right. So as a comparison, I looked up the play percentages of Entomb at 9%, Demonic Tutor at 30%. You would need to cast both of those cards to get the equivalent. And to be fair, it's 2 mana more efficient, but Diabolic Tutor is played in 22%. I don't know why people wouldn't just throw Final Parting in if they're playing Diabolic Tutor.
They're doing the same thing.
For
right?
one more mana, it's potential. It's
unless they're not reanimating with Diabolic Tutor, they may not be reanimating.
It's true. But I mean, there's probably going to be a flashback card or something that you can throw in if you're not reanimating. And you're playing black, you should just play one reanimate spell. Just do it for me.
Just there's black decks that might not play creatures though.
That's okay. You can still put like flashback instants and sorceries.
Yes.
In to your
graveyard. Just do it for me.
Just do it for me.
Yeah. So this card is definitely a combo card though.
Yeah.
So
this card is near and dear to my heart and everyone should play it.
Yeah. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot.
All right. So at number 6, we have two cards. We thought fill a similar role.
Yes.
In that you're probably either going to swing that turn to hopefully try to win. I think less the one that Coyle has. I think that the one that he's going to talk about is less of this.
It is.
But the card that I have is Bluster Squall. I think it's played, so it's an overload card.
Mm-hmm.
For one blue, you tap one creature you don't control, or you overload for 4, 3 and a blue. And you tap all creatures you don't control. So it's really good when you are tapping all creatures you don't control as a political device
mm-hmm.
to make it so that at the end of someone's turn, before someone who has creatures is going to take a turn, you can tap all creatures you don't control and then they'll untap and can swing at someone. Or you can use it at the end of someone's turn just before yours, and then you have the open field, or you can do it just before combat on someone else's when you know they're going to swing at you. This card is played in 1,300 decks and is in 1% of the deck that it could be in.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. Cards like this, cards that bounce creatures to people's hands mm-hmm. are very similar cards. This is a lot of people play cards like Cyclonic Rift to make it so that creatures don't swing at them or to kind of wipe the board. Obviously, Cyclonic Rift does a lot more than just tapping creatures. But in some cases, all you did was bounce creatures to their hand because they didn't have anything else out, in which case this would have done the same, a very similar role. But obviously, you need to be swinging or something with this.
Right. Or like you said, preventing someone from swinging at you.
Right.
The one thing you have to watch out for with Cyclonic Rift is if you're bouncing, I mean, let's say you're playing against like a Brago player or something, you're bouncing ETB creatures back to their hand.
Right.
Giving them, you know, extra gas, something you might not want to do. But if you are just looking to wipe the board for a turn or something, you might consider my spell in this slot, Evacuation. For 3, a blue and a blue, for instant speed, return all creatures to their owner's hands.
Yeah.
So like Cyclonic Rift, it does bounce all the creatures. However, it also bounces your own. So if you yourself are playing an ETB trigger or you want to get your own stuff out of the way of someone playing a board wipe or something, you could always play Evacuation. It's 2 less mana than an overloaded Cyclonic Rift. It doesn't have the modal ability of Cyclonic Rift for 2 mana to bounce one thing. So obviously there are some different decks that you play them in, but there are many opportunities that people just throw a Cyclonic Rift in where Bluster Squall or Evacuation would actually be an even better option.
And they cost less mana.
And money.
Yeah, a lot less.
Just as a comparison, Evacuation played in 6%, Bluster Squall played in 1%. Cyclonic Rift is played in 45% of decks that can play it. It is a super strong card, but probably doesn't belong in that many decks.
I think a lot of people have the mindset of it's blue, so I'm going to put this in here.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a frustrating card to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but you generally see if someone left up seven, you're like, oh, I have a feeling I know why their seven mana is still sitting out.
I've had someone play around seven mana from me when I was empty handed and I just didn't understand it.
Really?
Yeah. They didn't ask how many cards I had in my hand.
But I assume your hands were just on the table.
My hands were on the table, crossed in front of me, just sitting there. It's like, I have seven mana up. And then I just did one of these, just showed my hands completely empty. It's like, but I have seven. They played around it. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. Next on the list, because that one was number six. Number five. This has a mechanic that Andy absolutely loves.
It's great.
It's called Regal Behemoth. Regal Behemoth fills a role of both a mana doubler and a monarch getter.
Monarch getter.
Yeah. So for four, a green and a green, this is a 5/5 lizard creature with trample that says when Regal Behemoth enters the battlefield, you become the monarch. And whenever you tap a land for mana while you're the monarch, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. So yeah, like I said, it's a mana doubler. It's played in 3% of decks it possibly can. And let me tell you, green wants to ramp. And maybe, you know, when you have six mana, you're already done ramping. But that's not true. There's X spells. Come on, you gotta cast for more.
And Regal Behemoth is actually a dinosaur now.
Oh, it's been redacted to be a dinosaur.
Errated.
Not redacted. Not redacted.
It's, you can't see what this creature type is at all.
They took it out.
It's just redacted. Now you can't look at it. What creature type is this? Well, you don't know.
No, it's redacted.
So I am a huge fan of the Monarch. It solves a lot of problems for decks that can't draw. I think it's a fun multiplayer mechanic. But I also was very excited to have this on the list before... while we were putting this together, because this past Monday at Commander League, I was playing Nikki of the Old Ways, and I always want to say the Hidden Ways, but it's not. It's the Old Ways.
It's not.
Because I mix it with Rune of the Hidden Realms with Nikki of the Old Ways. And I run one spell in that deck, Primal Surge, to basically drop all the creatures and lands that I have until I decide to stop.
Yep.
And I had it in hand, and I was like, well, maybe we'll get there. Who knows? It was the first time I ever had the card even in my hand.
Sure.
And so we're playing, and I draw Regal Behemoth on six. And I go, okay, if I can just keep Regal Behemoth alive and also still be the monarch, because you have to be the monarch for it to double.
Yep.
And so there was one person who was going to swing at me, and they go, oh, you're going to block with your 5/5. They also had a 5/5.
Ah.
And I was like, I'm not going to block, but I need to stay the monarch.
Right.
And so they decided not to swing. And so on my turn, I was able to cast Primal Surge and win. I think this card is pretty underplayed. And surprisingly, and it could be because it's a $7 card. It's kind of an expensive card.
Sure.
Because it's from Conspiracy.
It's from Conspiracy.
So Take the Crown.
That set wasn't opened a ton.
No, but if you look at cards like Zendikar Resurgent or...
Zendikar Resurgent played in 16% of decks that it can be in.
And this is one less mana.
It is. It's one less mana. It's on a creature.
That has trample, so you can swing with trample to get Monarch back.
Right. So it has that card draw, where Zendikar Resurgent, you only get the card draw whenever you cast a creature spell.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, so I also have this compared to Mirari's Wake, which is played in 27% of the decks that it can be. Mirari's Wake does give your creatures +1/+1, and it's a 5-mana enchantment, so it costs one less. But both Zendikar Resurgent and Mirari's Wake only make it so your lands tap for mana of that mana type for double, where Regal Behemoth says it taps for one mana of any type. So it can even help you with mana fixing. You know, you tap your forest and you get a green and a black, and not just double green.
Right, right. Yeah, in addition to the mana that land already produces.
And Mirari's Wake doesn't draw you any cards.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I had a Mirari's Wake sitting in my binder, my trade binder, for forever, and I did not realize that card was $21.
Super good.
No, I thought it was like a $3 trade evener. So I was sitting there, and I was like, no one wants to trade for this. It's a good card, but why is nobody like evening trades? So I went up to the game shop one time, and I just gave them my binder to look through to just pick out cards, and they go, oh, you have two of these? Okay, well, that's like, we can give you like 14 on each. I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's a $27 card. Oh, I didn't realize that. So this one is much more affordable and you can get it out sooner and it's on a 5/5.
Well, it's 6 mana versus Mirari's Wake, which is a 5.
I'm sorry, I was talking Zendikar Resurgent.
Oh, Zendikar Resurgent.
Compared to Zendikar Resurgent, which I think people are playing a lot more over this.
Oh, for sure they are.
Granted, Zendikar Resurgent can potentially do more in the future.
Yeah.
If you cast like 7 creature spells immediately.
Right.
And draw 7 cards.
Even if someone removes Regal Behemoth after you cast it, you still are the Monarch and you're still going to draw at least one card. That's at very minimum, you're going to draw one card.
No matter what, you draw one because you're going to end your turn.
Unless someone has some really weird flash in reanimation so they become the Monarch. But that ain't going to happen.
You often absolutely could blink a creature and become the somebody. Monarch. I was in that game and it wasn't me. I didn't lose it. Someone mm-hmm. else stole it and you said, I'm just going to bounce this or something.
I was playing. So this was Command. What I'm referring to is Command Fest Chicago. Someone played a black creature that says when it enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch. And I was playing Yeva and I'm like, okay, this is a weird interaction I never thought I'd have. I'm going to flash in Regal Behemoth before you go to end step and I'm going to become the Monarch.
Yeah.
And then I had double mana. It was really good. Really
yeah,
good
that's turn. Great. Yeah. So this card's good. Underplayed. You should play more of it.
Play more Regal Behemoth.
Play more Regal Behemoth. All right, next card. This is number 4 on our list, our arbitrary list of 1 through 10.
Yes.
Winds of Abandon. So card from Modern Horizons. So it's only been out for a little bit. Winds of Abandon is 1 and a white with Overload. 4 white. So you exile a target creature you don't control. For each creature exiled this way, its controller searches their library for a basic land card. Those players put those lands onto the battlefield tapped and then shuffle their libraries. You can overload it to say exile each creature you don't control.
Mm-hmm.
So although you are ramping your opponents, I have had someone cast Winds of Abandon on me when I was presenting lethal with like my Locust God deck.
Mm-hmm.
So they exiled like 15 locusts and Locust God. Now I got to pull all the lands pretty much
sure.
out of my deck, but I was able to play the Locust God back down and then had some mana to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it can get rid of huge things that are going to take care of you the next time they have the chance.
For sure. It's a
special. And you exile them.
Yeah.
That's the best part. It's not just destroy.
Absolutely. The exile is the important part. It is extremely strong against higher tier decks that are running more aggressive mana bases that run a lot less basics. Just like if you're playing against someone in Modern and you're casting Path to Exile, you know, if they're playing a 4-color deck, they might only have 1 basic or 2 basics to go find. Eventually, they'll run out of basics to go find. So, yeah, and against a 5-color deck, they might only be playing 1 of each basic. You exile 6 of their creatures. Now they're not getting the full value.
And you can still cast it for 1 and a white to take care of 1 problem creature.
Absolutely.
You don't have to overload for 6 mana.
Right.
Sometimes you won't want to. Like, I don't know if it was a good idea when that person overloaded it when I was able to get like 16 basics.
Yeah.
I see what they were, you know, thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time I only had like 1 or 2 cards in hand. So I think their thought was, well, if Andy doesn't have a wheel or doesn't have an ability to draw like 9 cards or something,
sure,
he can't win. And I don't think I did. I mean, granted, the Locust God has that ability that most people don't remember. You can pay 4 and draw a card,
sure,
then discard a
sure.
card. And I was able to do that a bunch of times because I had all that extra mana.
Yep.
But I think a lot of people look at overload cards and they expect them to always be the overload, even with Cyclonic Rift. And don't
for
fall
sure.
into that trap.
No,
just cast Cyclonic Rift for 1 and a blue sometimes.
Right.
It's fine.
Now, Winds of Abandon is sorcery speed, which does give it a little knockdown, in my opinion. Comparing cards to like Path to Exile, played in 29% of decks. Swords to Plowshare, played in 58% of decks. But if you compare it to some of the board wipes that it kind of can mimic, the one that I brought up is Merciless Eviction. Now, Merciless Eviction is modal, that you can exile all creatures, all artifacts. But again, it's all creatures or all artifacts. So it includes your own, where Winds of Abandon is only creatures your opponents control. Merciless Eviction played in 32% of decks. I think if you're playing Merciless Eviction, chances are most of the time you're playing it to exile creatures and you should probably think about playing Winds of Abandon as well.
As well. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't think I mentioned it, it's played in 3% of the decks it could be played in. It's played in about 4,500 decks that are posted. So I think that this is a card that is going to, I think it's going to go up.
It for sure will. It,
I mean, I just think that as we get more, like, I know later this year we're going to get a lot of commanders, so I'd be curious to see what Winds of Abandon looks like later this year. I mean, it's already just shy of $3.
Right.
And I mean, it was only printed in Modern Horizons, but it's decent removal to exile things that are going to cause. It's definitely the exile. If it was just destroy or bounce
it
or something,
it wouldn't be
useful.
No. Fun fact, this was one of the early cards spoiled for Modern Horizons, and I still can't read right half the time, and I thought it was Winds of Abaddon, and I was really excited for a legendary creature Abaddon to get released in Modern Horizons.
Oh my gosh.
That didn't happen.
I had a friend who used to pronounce Avacyn Aviacyn, and it was like, oh, that is such a fancy set, Aviacyn Restored. And then they were like, oh wait, it's pronounced Avacyn. I didn't know what card they were talking about when I started playing the game in Gatecrash. They would talk about this set. I was like, what set is that? Oh, it's Avacyn.
Aviacyn. I like that better.
I do too.
Use that from now on.
It's great.
All right, next on the list, we've got another card that's near and dear to my heart. Tempt with Discovery.
Don't be tempted. But we're going to be tempted.
I mean, so here's the thing about Tempt with Discovery. The more people that get tempted, the better the card is. And it becomes so worth it.
Everything tells me to not, but I'm always tempted because it's like, oh, one more good land? Yeah, I'll go grab it. It's fine.
It's any land. Okay, so Tempt with Discovery for 3 and a green is a sorcery with the keyword Tempting Offer. Search your library for a land card and put it on the battlefield. Each opponent may search their library for a land card and put it on the battlefield. For each opponent who searches a library this way, search your library for a land card and put it on the battlefield. Then each player who searched the library this way shuffles it. So at the very, 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 very worst, Tempt with Discovery is a 4-mana, grab any land in your deck and put it on the battlefield. Untapped.
At the very worst.
At the very worst.
This is the same CMC as Cultivate. Or no.
No. It's
Explosive Vegetation.
Yes.
Same CMC as Explosive Vegetation.
Yes. So it is played in 7% of decks, just under 10,000 of 140,000 decks that it can play in. Green wants to ramp. Maybe not on turn 4, but...
But you can usually play this on turn 3.
Let me tell you about Magical Christmas Land, Tempt with Discovery.
It wasn't even... You had it happen.
Yeah.
We made a mistake.
Multiple times.
A big mistake.
It's not the first time. No, that was the first time, but it wasn't the last time. So the first time I actually ever played with Tempt with Discovery was in my Marin deck. And Marin of Clan Nel'Toth is green-black, and I played Urborg Cabal Coffers in that. So if one other person searches for a land, you can go grab Urborg and Cabal Coffers and just, you know, have those on board. You can grab Thespian Stage and the one with ice counters. What's that land called with ice counters that turns into the... Flying Indestructible 10/10?
Oh, you're talking about Merit Lage. It makes Merit Lage's token. It is oh my gosh.
I know.
Why can't we think of this card?
But I mean, you can grab both of those if one other person searches for a land. And typically not
Dark Depths.
Dark
Depths.
Oh
my gosh.
So I mean, it's definitely great when someone is behind on lands and you're like, "Hey, I've got this really cool Tempt with Discovery that you can do." And when everyone searches for it, you grab Tron. You grab all 3 Urza lands. You put them on the battlefield. You tap for 7. You cast Morophon. You still have 1 land untapped. You name dragons, and you put every single dragon down that's in your hand. Best time ever. The key to Tempt with the Discovery is don't search when someone tempts you with Discovery. In comparison... the one card that I found that is most similar, and let me tell you, there isn't many that are similar to this, would be Crop Rotation. Crop Rotation is a 1 green instant that says sacrifice a land you control, then search your library for a land and put it onto the battlefield. So you do have to sacrifice a land. It is instant speed, and it is only one green, but it does only grab you one land. Where Tempt with Discovery could potentially grab you four lands. The other card, and that in crap rotation is played in 10% of decks that it can, that it belongs to. A lot of times it's used as kind of a trick in order to get a land that has a special enter the battlefield effect, like Bajuka Bog. The other card would be Expedition Map. Expedition Map is a one mana artifact. You can pay two, tap it, sacrifice it, search your library for a land, and put it into your hand. That's played in 7% of decks, and that's a colorless artifact, so it's actually available to a lot more decks than Tempt with Discovery is. And that goes into your hand. It doesn't go on the battlefield.
The other thing to remember, I guess, about Tempt with Discovery, though, is that based on the rulings, every time you search for a land, you get to know what the person in front of you grabbed. So mm-hmm. when you cast Tempt with Discovery, the person who's casting it does it, and they grab one land and they put it onto the battlefield. Mm-hmm. Then their opponents decide, and in most cases, like ours, everybody just grabs all their lands at one time and doesn't really look at what everybody else was grabbing. Mm-hmm. But the way it resolves is actually the person who casts it gets one card. Then the person to their left decides yes or no, and they grab one. Mm-hmm. Then the next person, then the next. And then the person who initially casts it does it again.
Wait, are you sure?
Yes.
I know the first one does, but then isn't it each opponent?
After each opponent, it says your opponents decide in turn order whether or not they accept the offer, starting with the opponent on your left. Each opponent will know the decisions of previous opponents in turn order when making their decision.
They'll know the decision on whether they say yes, but they won't know what land they grabbed.
Oh, they know the correct. They know the decision. You're correct. Right. And it says after each opponent has decided, the effects happen simultaneously for each one who accepted the offer.
Right.
Then the effect happens again for you a number of times equal to the number of opponents who accepted.
Right. So I grab Ancient Tomb with my first one going, I just want some extra mana.
And then you grab Trine.
And then I grab Trine.
That was terrible. He was playing a Morrophon deck and we had no idea Trine was even in the deck.
No, because it doesn't make the way my Morrophon deck works. Tron doesn't really make sense because it's all a bunch of colored pips in the creature cast.
Right.
But I do that just so I can cast Morrophon so many times.
Right.
So yeah, definitely I think an underplayed card. Take advantage of your friends. Yeah,
based on what we see. You know, this card I have seen more often than some of these. But yeah. So obviously, like we said, it's based on the percentage based on EDH rec. But right. Play more so that number goes up.
Yes.
Number two, Ashiok Dream Render. So War of the Spark, Ashiok one, and then it's got hybrid blue black for a planeswalker with five loyalty that says spells and abilities your opponents control can't cause their controller to search their library. So it's really good in Commander. Like, oh, yeah. Really, really good.
Oh yeah.
And then minus one target player puts the top four cards of their library into their graveyard and then exile each opponent's graveyard. So essentially you're milling one person for four and then you Bojuka Bog all of your opponents, right? Yeah. Bojuka Bog's a land and you just choose one opponent. This is all. So this one you can't even beat. You can be slightly political if you're milling the person that has the graveyard shenanigans, but then everybody else is just victim of circumstance.
For sure.
This card has done way more work in Commander than I ever expected.
Oh yeah.
And it's just someone's playing, you know, a Golos deck can't tutor for the land.
Yeah.
You know, all of the tutors that everybody plays are turned off and tutors are just abound in Commander.
Including Fetchlands.
Fetchlands, you can't tutor.
Not even in Evolving Wilds.
Nope.
Sorry.
And I know when we were talking about the notes, this is similar, you know, to like Aven Mind Censor.
Right. Aven Mind Censor is played in about the same amount of decks that Ashiok can be played in, but Aven Mind Censor is mono white. Ashiok is two colors, and blue and black.
Yeah. And Aven allows you to at least look at the top four. This one's like, no, can't even look at one.
Not
you
one.
Can just sack that fetch land if you'd like. And you can just.
And I know you mentioned that, you know, milling out the person who is graveyard, you can mill yourself with this card
you
as well.
You can mill yourself.
In case you are, I don't know, playing a black-blue reanimator deck or something. I mean, you're in the right colors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a really important thing to note, and you said it, the mana cost is hybrid blue-black, and one. It's very easy to cast this card. You don't need to be black-blue fixed in order to cast this card. You can cast it for black-black one or blue-blue one. Mm-hmm. So it's a three-mana planeswalker to get out there. Yeah. You can activate its ability 5 times to -1.
I play this in my Niv-Mizzet Reborn deck, and it usually is coming down later in the game, but everybody, you know, tends to have 5 or 6 cards, or someone that's playing with the graveyard might have even 10 or 15 and they're just all gone now.
Yep.
I think when we played against this, you were playing like a blue-black zombies deck, and I was like, well, I guess I do that, right? Yeah. I choose it on you and then I exile all of them, and I think I did hit Grave Robber. No,
yeah.
Gravecrawler, not Grave Robber.
Right.
They're both zombie cards that matter, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But Gravecrawler, which was part of one of your combos. And yep. I was like, well, I don't have to worry about that now.
That's true. That's true. I have to swing now.
I actually have to swing like a noob.
It is. I mean, it's other than swinging, that was my win con for that deck. So yeah, it definitely takes care of a lot of answers. You know, you see CEDH decks playing this card because it prevents tutoring. You can mill, like if someone, you probably won't see this in your pods unless you're playing CEDH, but if someone casts an Imperial Seal, it's a sorcery speed Vampiric Tutor, puts a card on top of their library, now you can, on your turn, cast Ashiok, mill it away, and it goes into exile. It's gone forever.
Right, and Ashiok, I don't think I mentioned, is in 9% of the decks it can be in, and it's 7,600 decks about. So yeah.
In comparison, Bajuka Bog is played in 34% of the decks that it can be in.
Yeah.
Which is insane that there's that disparity between the two. But I guess one's a land. You can crop rotation one, but still.
On to number one. Which number one? This one actually we did think was actually like number one
we
of
agree.
Our list.
Number
yeah,
one.
This one we agree.
All right, guys. You are not playing enough of Finale of Devastation. This card
T-Rex has Roar. This, Jurassic Park roars.
This card has everything. Okay. Finale of Devastation is a sorcery that costs X green. Says search your library and or graveyard for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle it. And if X is 10 or more, creatures you control get +X/+X and gain haste until end of turn. Holy crap.
You know the number of times I've seen people grab a card from the graveyard?
Zero
times.
You've seen it 0 times. I know it.
Even myself, I go and I get the card from the deck. I yeah. never grab it from the graveyard.
It's like, guys, if you tried to let me paint the scenario.
Folks.
You tried to Crater Hoof and someone killed your Crater Hoof. You can finale for your Crater Hoof.
Yeah.
It's in your graveyard. Grab it. Grab it by the reins. Put it on the battlefield.
This is like Green Sun Zena.
This is almost identical to Green Sun Zenith.
I play Green Sun Zenith.
Okay. So Green Sun Zenith is X green, so it costs 1 less green. It says search your library for a green creature card and put it on the battlefield. And then you shuffle Green Sun Zenith back into your library. So it limits you on what color creature you can get. It does shuffle back in. But
it can't grab the graveyard.
It doesn't grab from graveyard. And if you X is 10 or more, it doesn't give +10/+10 in haste.
No.
So, I mean, you're probably, Green Sun Zenith is a better card to have in your starting hand. Hour of Devastation is your finisher.
Finale of Devastation.
Finale of Devastation.
Hour is terrible.
Hour of Devastation
is gonna the kill red. The red from
it was
Hour
relevant
of
one time. It was relevant one time when it removes Indestructible and does 5 damage to all creatures and non-bolus planeswalkers. But,
yep, that did happen once. But this card's really good. Especially if you spend 12, right? Because you have to spend 12 to get that.
Yep.
And you just go grab Avenger of Zendikar.
It's a huge win condition.
I mean, it's more than just Avenger, right? You can grab Craterhoof, but Avenger makes all those plants, and then they all get +10/+10 in haste. I would argue personally, I would grab Avenger over Craterhoof, depending on how many creatures you have out.
So the thing is when you cast this card, Avenger would come onto the battlefield and then give all of your creatures you currently control haste, and then Avenger's ETB would trigger.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize. Okay.
It's also why, the reason Tooth and Nail is so good with Craterhoof Behemoth and Avenger of Zendikar is because you can stack the ETB triggers of Craterhoof to happen after Avenger.
Sure.
But otherwise, you're absolutely correct.
Okay, grab Craterhoof. Grab the Craterhoof. Or just grab something silly and it gets +10/+10.
Grab something with trample. I mean, it really doesn't matter what it is with trample.
Yeah.
And it's, it just goes, and it doesn't give trample, unfortunately. But, you know, this is even played in modern. with infinite mana combos to grab a win condition with trample. It's Eldamri's Call is played in it to make infinite mana with the...
Is this Counter's Company or like something
similar? It is,
like
Devoted, it is Company. Druid, it's Devoted Druid with Vizier. Vizier
or, yeah.
Yeah, to make infinite mana. And I forget what the win condition is, but there's that 7-mana Boars that gives all your creatures +2/+2.
End Rays, Forerunners.
Yeah, that's a really good card to grab with this.
Yeah.
So, Green Sun Zenith played in 14% of deck. Finale of Devastation played at 6% of decks.
Six. That's low.
It is like a $14 card. So it is a little bit expensive, but it can be your win condition, and you should totally grab it.
Play more of this. I think I only run it in two or three decks right now. It's because I just don't have any more.
Yeah. I mean, I run.
Not that I'm all about having the exact same cards in every single deck, but this one's really good because you can get any creature that you need at the time you need it.
For sure.
I mean, it is a sorcery, so you do have to do it on your turn. But
it'll give everything hastes, and that's okay because you just win on your
turn. It's also still fine to cast for, like, just to grab a creature that costs 4 mana or something. You don't have to cast it for 10. This is another one of those cards. Don't be afraid to cast it for its non-overload or its non-give me the extra stuff.
Right. Yeah, you can use it as a toolbox. Go grab your Reclamation Sage and blow up the problem artifact or enchantment if you really need to do it.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome.
So those are our top 10 under 10%.
Thanks for listening.
You still have more work to do. You have Commander of the Week.
Man, was I happy to rebuild this commander. So, Commander of the Week, I present my Rakdos commander, Anji Falconwrath. I believe Anji is technically the correct pronunciation, but
it's not Anya.
I call her Anya, but I think it's supposed to be Anji.
Okay.
Like they said it was supposed to be like Schwabish German, like Southern German pronunciation, like Anji.
Oh.
But I'm going to call her Anya because that's what she deserves, and she's my favorite commander like almost ever.
Okay.
So Anya Falconwrath is printed in the C19 commander precons as the face commander for the Merciless Rage, I believe was the deck precon. So for one, a black and a red, you get a legendary creature vampire. It's a 1/3 haste that says tap, discard a card, draw a card. And whenever you discard a card, if it has madness, untap Anya Falconwrath. So this deck can be built in a lot of different ways. There's some people who build it Reanimator, which is kind of supported by some of the other legendary creatures that were printed in that precon, like Chainer. A lot of people just played as a win con with World Gorger Dragon combo, which is built into the deck. But I actually have kind of an alternate win condition. I'm going to call it the main win condition. This is Anya Wheels. This is what Andy referred to earlier as a wheelie good deck. And that's the title of of the deck. So it aims to put down enchantments that will, enchantments and creatures technically, that will ping your opponents for discarding cards and drawing cards. And then start casting wheels. Wheels being cards that would make everyone discard their hand and draw a new set of cards. I had a shell for Nekusar built, and Nekusar is Grixis, so you get to add blue, which does give you a lot more opportunities to wheel things. However, the benefit of being able to discard madness cards to filter your hand, I found to be actually a lot better than Nekusar, on top of the fact that Anya only costs 3 mana and Nekusar costs 5 mana. So some of the payoff cards that you're going to want is cards like Cataract Parasite, which is for 1 black to 1/1. That says whenever an opponent draws a card, if you control a red permanent, spoiler, Anya's a red permanent, you may have Cataract Parasite deal 1 damage to that player. So with a full wheel, everyone's taking 7. I'm playing Dockside Extortionist to get more mana. Glinthorn Buccaneer was a creature printed in M20 that's super, super good for these wheel decks, and I believe is being very underplayed. It's a 2/4 haste that says whenever you discard a card, Glinthorn Buccaneer deals 1 damage to each opponent. For 1 and a red, you can discard a card, draw a card, and you can only activate that ability when he's attacking. So this allows it so that not only do you have effects that are going to do damage when your opponents discard cards, but you're also going to have effects when you discard cards yourself. Some of the enchantment payoffs that you're going to want to pay attention to are cards like Waste Knot. Waste Knot says, whenever an opponent discards a creature card, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Whenever an opponent discards a land, add black to your mana pool. Whenever an opponent discards a non-creature, non-land, draw a card. So this kind of allows you to almost storm while you're wheeling, because you're going to add mana, you're going to add creatures, you're going to draw additional cards. One card that was printed in Theros that just makes this deck absolutely bonkers is Underworld Breach. For one and a red, each non-land card in your graveyard has escape, and the escape cost is equal to the card's mana cost, plus exile three other cards from your graveyard. So what this allows you to do is recast all of your wheels that you're putting into your graveyard as the turn goes on. And you can either wheel your opponents to death with all the damage that they're taking. Cards like Liliana's Caress, one and a black, whenever an opponent discards a card, that player loses two life. Megrim, whenever an opponent discards a card, Megrim deals two damage to that player. So you're either killing them with those enchantments, or you're getting to your World Gorger Dragon combo, which is World Gorger Dragon and Reanimate, or Animate Dead, Dance of the Dead, or Necromancy to produce infinite mana, and then killing everyone with an Exsanguinate for X equals a million, or a Torment of Hailfire for X equals a million. Nice. Or Absinthe's Judgment for X equals a million, which is a madness card.
But it's a million in each instance.
In each instance.
Always 1 million.
Always a million or 2 million, whatever you want. The one part that people don't really know about Anya, they don't pay attention to it, is when you wheel a hand away, if you wheel three madness cards in that hand, you draw your new hand and you have three instances of Anya's second ability of whenever you discard a card, if it has madness, you can untap Anya. This allows you to filter non-madness cards and untap Anya after the wheel has resolved. So you get to specifically sculpt your hand after a wheel, which helps you go into another wheel and keep comboing off. So this is one of my favorite decks to play. It is very solitaire. There is a little bit of protection with Red Elemental Blast to help, you know, combat blue counterspells. But yeah, super fun to play. We'll post the deck list.
That'll be up tonight, probably, or tomorrow morning.
I promise you'll love it. Your friends probably won't, but you will.
And that's all we have for you this week. That's it.
That's it?
That's all she wrote.
Darn.
But we'll be back next week.
Oh, yes.
So like always, we want to thank you for listening. If you want to contact us, you can head to guardianprojectpodcast.com. On Twitter, you can find me at @ATFlory.
You can find me at @WormCoilEngine.
And you can take a look for Guardian Project Pod, #GuardianProjectPod, to find our posts and episodes. We like to hear from you, so send us a message. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I forgot to talk about my underplayed mana rock. This deck's expensive. It doesn't even run like Imperial Seal.
It doesn't even run Green Sun Zenith.
It doesn't run Green Sun Zenith.